Thank you for helping us make budget again last year. Thanks to your support, Lutheran Public Radio has been independent and in the black for almost 4 years. You've heard us say, now only our listeners can cancel us, and we mean it. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your prayers. Thanks for your financial support. And we're looking forward to partnering with you again in 2012. Christ-centered, cross-focused talk radio for the world, issues, etc., and sacred music for the world, LutheranPublicRadio.org. Well, the South Carolina primary held on Saturday looked like an upset for Newt Gingrich. He came out with 40%+ of the votes there. Last week, we did an interview with Sarah Pulliam Bailey in anticipation of the South Carolina primary, and we talked with her about how the media is covering evangelical voters down there. I think this interview that we're about to play for you still has a lot of relevance even after the South Carolina primary, where we know the result. Sarah Pulliam Bailey joined us. She's a contributor to GetReligion.org and online editor for Christianity Today. I began Friday's interview with her asking her whether or not evangelical voters in South Carolina could prove to be a measure for how evangelical voters are going to go in November.
I think that reporters are mostly interested in South Carolina specifically because they're looking at this state as just this state in the primaries. There's a much higher percentage of evangelicals in South Carolina than the rest of the country. So when you're looking at each individual state, you want to look at the breakdown of evangelicals in South Carolina at 60%, which is quite high. And so they're looking at whether that block of voters will make a difference in Saturday's primary election. Whether that is indicative of the entire GOP or the entire election later on, less so, unless South Carolina is a swing state or something like that.
You have noted, especially with regard to the Chicago Tribune and the Los Angeles Times, some of what you call strange coverage. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so what I think is going on is these reporters are kind of going in with almost a zoo narrative. Let's go into the cage and look at the evangelicals when the elections come around. And what's confusing, especially for reporters, is because evangelicals don't have a pope or a hierarchy or some sort of official structure, they look to just random evangelicals to see who they're endorsing and try to project that on all evangelicals across the state. So what my complaint with this particular article was, this story just looked at random evangelicals. From my understanding, they don't necessarily represent some larger group of evangelicals. You can't necessarily take their endorsement and project it on all evangelicals in South Carolina are going to vote this way because of these three individuals.
So is it that the reporters simply don't know who to talk to get a reading of the general evangelical mood there politically, or is it because they mistake some of these, you know, somebody just posts something on YouTube and endorses someone, and they think that must be an important endorsement? They can't gauge the measure here?
Yeah, both of those cases, I think, are going on. I think it's confusing for them to figure out, okay, well, we're trying to figure out who evangelicals are going to vote for, as, you know, if there was such a voting block, if they were to kind of coalesce behind one candidate, which it doesn't look like they will necessarily, but they want to look to specific individuals to kind of project overall, and I think it's just too difficult to tell at this point. Or, you know, there may be some evangelical leaders, people who lead certain organizations or who are pastors as larger churches who may vote a certain way, but that doesn't necessarily mean their flock will vote the same way.
You also wrote recently about CNN, Dan Gilgoff's coverage of this with regard to evangelical support for Mitt Romney. What did you find?
Yes, I thought Dan did a really nice job of looking at one individual who is supporting Mitt Romney. What he does a little bit differently, or much differently actually, is he looks at this one individual and explains kind of the context for her support. He quotes her quite a bit in the piece. It's a very lengthy piece, and kind of profiles this woman. What are her motivations? Who does she represent? He gives a lot of kind of support for why she's coming from where she's coming from, using quotes, quoting other people to describe her work. So he builds a case throughout the piece, whereas other pieces tend to just sort of report press releases as though they were our big news or something.
How would you counsel a journalist headed for South Carolina trying to gauge where evangelicals are politically with regard to the GOP? Who should they be talking to, or what kind of a story should they be writing with sources kind of built toward making a case that this is representative of the broader evangelical mind?
Sure. I think you can look at, you know, two or three things, at least, to start reporting. You can look at polls. How are evangelicals polling right now? And then you can talk to a couple of leaders, either at the national level or at the local level, of different political groups and see what they're finding, what their supporters are saying. And you want to really look at, you know, their numbers. How much money does this organization have? How many people do they say they represent? To build your case as to why, you know, evangelicals might vote a certain way, you need some supporting evidence for that. And I think instead of just looking, cherry-picking here and there, oh, this person self-identifies as an evangelical, therefore all evangelicals will vote a certain way, you can use different pieces. And third, you can talk to, there are a lot of political science researchers who have done this kind of research who either live in South Carolina or they're studying South Carolina, and talk to them about what they're seeing to, again, build evidence for your piece.
Would it be interesting, if not entirely informative, to just hang out in a parking lot on Sunday afternoon when church lets out and talk to a few real-life, ordinary, man-on-the-street evangelicals?
So on one hand, I don't want to discourage that, because I think reporters could use a little bit of church, experience, hang out at a church to get a sense of what it's like if they don't do that on a regular basis. At the same time, I don't think that is a good idea for a story, to base an entire story on that. It might maybe add a little bit of color, but if you base one church visit, and, you know, it depends, if you go to one kind of evangelical church, and that you're going to get a very different experience than if you go to another denomination or another kind of church. It's going to be too much of a cherry picking to project on the rest of evangelicals in the state.
Another story I wanted to talk to you about, Sarah, I'm frankly a little confused by it, if only because the two parties here seem to be so unlikely: a black church and a shop that sells Ku Klux Klan paraphernalia and accoutrements. What is this story?
So this is a confusing story, so I'm not surprised you are confused. But what happened was that there was this legal battle in South Carolina between members of the Ku Klux Klan and a black church. And the question was over whether who was the rightful owner of the building, where the rights were. And so what happened was we got initial reports that the judge ruled in favor of the black church. But what was confusing, the most obvious question was how did they get into this dispute in the first place? And so the New York Times has this fascinating story looking up at how the deeds to the building ended up in the hands of this black pastor and his church. And so there's, you know, this nice, long, complex story behind it, and I think the Times did a really nice job of kind of going through that with the readers.
So if you could summarize the story for us, that obviously the New York Times took the time to delve into, how would you summarize it?
Sure. So what happened was the shop owner had deeded the building to a man named Michael Burden, and when these two men had gotten into a dispute, the shop owner threw out this family, Mr. Burden's family, and their possessions into the street. So the church kind of came around this man named Mr. Burden and helped them. It took them to a restaurant to eat, secured a hotel room, things like that. And so once this family needed money, they thought, okay, why don't we sell it to this black church? So they had sold the deed to this theater slash that also hosts this Ku Klux Klan shop to this black church. And so then they ended up getting into a legal battle when the shop owner tried to sell the building. So that's why it turned into this mess, and that's why it's so confusing. And what my point in the post was that there an earlier accounts of the stories of the judge, deeding it over back to the church were not necessarily clear, and the Times did a nice job of kind of showing the background and showing where how the church got involved, and you know, there are little bits of themes of forgiveness and things like that in the piece that are pretty interesting.
So kudos to the New York Times, which might be rare here, for really filling in the gaps of a rather confusing and baffling story.
Yeah, you know, we pick on the Times quite a bit, but I think a lot of that is because we have such high expectations. We want the New York Times to be good. We want to see them delve into background and pieces. And sometimes they have a little bit of a luxury of, you know, they were a little bit late to the story, but they did a better job of that. And I think they have that luxury because people will read the New York Times and they will read a story even if it's a little bit late. They expect it to be better. They expect the Times reporters to take the time to look at more details.
Sarah Pulliam Bailey is a contributor to GetReligion.org and an online editor for Christianity Today. Sarah, thanks for being our guest.
Thanks for having me.
When we come back on this Monday afternoon, January the 23rd, we're going to talk with Bob Hunter of the Christian Research Journal about so-called Yahweh groups. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
Are two new ways to stay connected to issues, etc. Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
Thank you for helping us make budget again last year. Thanks to your support, Lutheran Public Radio has been independent and in the black for almost 4 years. You've heard us say, now only our listeners can cancel us, and we mean it. Thanks for listening, thanks for your prayers, thanks for your financial support, and we're looking forward to partnering with you again in 2012. Christ-centered, cross-focused talk radio for the world, Issues Etc., and sacred music for the world, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen On Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On Demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click Listen On Demand.
Thanks for supporting the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. through the charitable grant program Thrivent Choice. We received more than $15,000 last year through Thrivent Choice. Our goal this year is to raise more than $20,000 through Thrivent Choice. For more information on how you can designate funds to Lutheran Public Radio, look for the Thrivent logo under the donate page at issuesetc.org. Please support Issues Etc. in 2012 with Thrivent Choice.